dbkmediaservices.com. You are listening to the Triple Crown Family Fun Center SVC Sports Talk Podcast. SVC Sports Talk is brought to you by SVCSportsZone.com and Triple Crown Sports. Now, here are your hosts for the Triple Crown Family Fun Center SVC Sports Talk, Shane Combs, Matt Combs, and Jeremy Ward.
Hello, SVC fans, and welcome back to the Triple Crown Family Fun Center SVC Sports Talk online radio show. I'm Shane Combs of SVCSportsZone.com. I want to thank you, the fans, for all the nice comments as we celebrated our 100th show a week ago, and a lot of nice comments saying you enjoy listening to the show. Some of you saying you enjoy listening and look forward to another 100. So certainly the fan feedback drives the show and is what's helped the growth of the show over the years. I'm joined, as I always am, by my brother Matt and good friend Jeremy Ward. And guys, I looked down through the agenda here. I had a little cross-country history, had a golfer at state. Seemed like we have two football teams separating themselves a little bit here. And I get a chance on the end of the regular season in volleyball to release my all-league squad tonight on the show. And even some soccer preparing for the postseason. As you look down through the past week in the SVC, Matt, I'll start with you. Maybe something that jumps out at you that you're most excited to touch on.
I don't know if there's any one thing. We always say this, but it's that time of year. You know, as you get toward the end of the season, whether it be in the fall, winter, spring, whatever, it gets kind of exciting. League championships are decided, and obviously teams get into the tournament trail. So, I don't know that there's any one thing, but it's just that time of year that I think is pretty exciting for all the SVC fans out there.
Well, Jeremy, welcome to the show. I'll ask you the same thing. It is kind of an exciting time across the entire fall scope of things. What say you in terms of this past week in the SVC?
Well, I think there's an air of excitement. You get into the tournament time, emotions are high. Whether it's for the ending of your season or the beginning of the second season. And I think you also have that transition, this time of year where you're getting ready for the World Series, football's in full swing, fall sports are winding down for high schools, and the anticipation for basketball in this area is always a big thing. So I think there's just a lot of emotions, mixed emotions in some cases that go into that. And as I look down the agenda, that's kind of what comes to mind.
Well, guys, I agree with everything you're saying. I think each thing, that's what makes the show work. That's what makes the website work, is we have some SVC fans in general just when it comes to sports, but then we have other people that are maybe a little bit more sports specific, and that's why we try to add the variety. So I think everyone's going to enjoy some things. We're definitely going to get to those things and talk about all of those things. But first, we respond to you, the fans, who responded to last week's second guessing of coaches' discussion. Playing time, is that appropriate? Stats, media, how do you do it? Should it be through text, email, by phone? We talk about it all next. Well, guys, in the first, I'd say 25 to maybe even 30 minutes of last week's show, we had just a great discussion on just coaching in general and second guessing how we as coaches even watch other coaches and we're a little guilty of, and just a lot of fun to talk about. Had a lot of face-to-face conversations with other coaches, with some parents. But in the inbox, there was two or three topics, I guess, that jumped out at me. That kind of went with what I was talking to some people about at some football games Friday night, as well as in the gym earlier in the week. And, the first one that comes up multiple times is playing time. That's obviously something that every coach is going to deal with, every parent, every fan, every person, personnel decisions and how you're going to divvy out the minutes or whatever it might be. You know, Matt, I'll ask you first, when it comes to all your years of coaching, is it something that it's just a dead set philosophy, or is there something that situation to situation you handle? Talk to us a little bit about how you're going to deal with parents when it comes to discussing playing time.
Well, I mean, I kind of have a policy that we really don't discuss it too awfully much, to be honest with you. I think that it's a conversation that probably never really is that fruitful. I mean, parents are going to view things through their lens, and obviously, as a parent myself, I know you love your children and you want to see them get a chance to succeed and all that. Whereas a coach is looking at the entire group, so you're looking at things through different, like I said, kind of different angle. But really, if you think about that, it's a conversation that's probably never going to amount to much, because if you're a decent coach, especially, you've put in a lot of time and thought into every decision you make, whether it be your strategy, whether it be who, your combinations of players you put on the floor, whatnot. So whatever, there's probably not much a parent can say to change your mind, and vice versa, there's probably not a lot you can say as a coach to change their mind. So it's one of those things that we basically don't get involved with too much. I think as a coach, it's important to be respectful to parents, and if a parent does it the right way and schedules a meeting and wants to sit down and talk with you, I think you do that out of professionalism, but I think there has to be some boundaries in that discussion as well.
Yeah, Jeremy, when you look at this as a coach, or maybe even as we all get older, if you're going to mentor a younger coach or maybe just even educate parents out there on this particular thing, just give us some of your thoughts on this topic.
Well, I agree with Matt. It just never seems to be a conversation that has an ending point. Again, sometimes just that sounding board is beneficial if parents feel like that they've spoken their piece and you can agree to disagree and go your separate ways. But I do think the one thing that I would encourage, whether any student athlete, you need to take responsibility. It's not your parent doesn't go to practice. They're there with you at the games, but they're not on the bench. They're not on the team. It's so critical that the athletes take responsibility for themselves. And if they want to have a discussion, they need to have that discussion with the coach. If there's a conflict, if there's an issue, if there's a situation that arises where, maybe something was said and the athlete takes it one way and the coach is thinking of it from a different perspective, and now the player's uncomfortable or angry, that's a situation where, maybe the parent can offer that insight to the coach and help them out a little bit, or, kind of act as the buffer and the go-between, just to throw it all out on the table. And it might be something that was, again, just a complete misunderstanding of perception, that if it's bottled up and goes on for 2 or 3 weeks, could be detrimental to the whole team. And those situations, I have nothing against the parent coming in and having that conversation, even if it does relate a little bit to personnel, playing time, that sort of thing. But, in almost every other case, the biggest thing for me would be for the athlete to take care of their status on the team.
Well, guys, as you were talking there, I was even jotting down some notes because I wanted to really make sure I hit on a couple key phrases there. I think back to becoming a head coach myself. I had some small sample sizes of being a head coach before I was even 20 years old at the varsity level. And then again, into my mid-20s, I had a little bit more of a full-time type of thing. But, as a young coach, this is something, if I'm being honest, I just wasn't very good at. And as I've gotten older, I've improved a lot, and I've done so by paying attention to older coaches and getting things, Matt, you included. And I probably differ a little bit from coaches on this. I just want to share some of my ideas. But even in saying I differ, as I listen to some of your guys' key phrases here, I don't know how far we're off. I think maybe we just go about it in a little bit different way. I've never been too against that parent communication, because as Jeremy just said, I think there's some positives if done correctly. There has to be some boundaries. Sometimes it is just an agree to disagree thing. But I think in terms of boundaries, one that I've always thought about that I think it's important for parents to understand is I'll talk about you and your kid, but please don't bring up other kids. I think that's one thing that's completely out. And the other thing is, you know, Matt, I've heard you say this. This is you've been one person that's persuaded me in this side of it. You can't be a liar. It's one of those things where if you throw out the honesty and it's done in a professional way, I think what I've heard you say one time is a month from now you can call me an idiot, but you can't look back and call me a liar. Are those some of the boundaries you're talking about? And can the communication be a positive thing, Matt, if it's done with some of these boundaries in place?
Well, you're talking about two things. You're talking about boundaries and you're talking about, I think, being proactive. You know, I think you have to be proactive with your players and with parents at the beginning of the season, where you sit down with them and say, look, this is where we do this with our players all the time. This is where I see you right now. This is kind of where you fit in your role. If we had a depth chart, you might be 10 right now, 11. What's that tell you? You're probably not going to get a ton of minutes. This is your role when you do get a chance, you know, those types of things. And I think there's nothing wrong. We try to meet with our parents individually preseason to sort of discuss these same things. Now, the other flip side of what you're talking about there is the boundaries. You know, one thing that's really, really important is to, and you heard Jeremy and I kind of hint to him, we say you can come in on a day separate than the game. You know, too many parents, you know, try to take care of this right after a game. That's not a good time to talk. You know, I mean, I think everybody understands that for the most part. Emotions are high. It's not a good time for anybody to talk about these things right after a game. I think if it's a day or two later, you want to come in, sit down. That's the way to handle it, you know. Because coaches, again, coaches have to keep the respect of their team. I'll give you an example. I had a parent come to me one time on the floor after a game. All right. He wasn't. You know, he wasn't out of control, yelling, screaming, anything like that. He came up to me on the floor and started to talk to me about his son's playing time. As I'm talking to him, I noticed everybody else in the gym's looking at us, right? I mean, all the other parents.
Sure, yeah.
The funny thing about it is we had discussed the possibility of his kid getting some more minutes, my coaches and I. Things weren't going real well that particular season. Well, after he talked to me, though, in front of everybody, we couldn't really make that move anymore. You know, he sort of hamstrung us because can you imagine the next game? Had I taken his son and played him more minutes?
You'd add a lot. Yeah.
I mean, everybody else in the gym say, well, all I got to do is go talk to the coach and my kid plays more minutes. So now, had that conversation happened the day later in my office in private, that wouldn't have been the same issue. You see what I mean?
Sure.
So I think the boundaries are important. When, you know, how are we going to do this? When are we going to do it? And I think those things have to be considered.
Well, Jeremy, Matt's leading me right into another great point here. So I'll allow you to respond to what he's saying, but maybe also touch on this for us. Not only the timing of it, but in today's media or technology, maybe the better word, what's the best way? Obviously, and the hectic schedules, we're all busy. Face-to-face is best. Is the text proper? Is the phone call proper? How would you, be it a coach, a parent, administrator, how would you best say is the best way to go about even setting something up to talk to the coach?
Well, there's positives and negatives, no matter how you look at it. You know, you can look at, what did I say earlier? Don't be afraid to put your name on it. You know, with a text or an email, it's right there. It's black and white. Nobody can come back later and say, well, that's not what I said. Or I never told you that sort of thing. And I know that happens when there's casual conversations, meetings in the office. And as much as you want, the situations to be private and much the same with a teacher and a parent, so on and so forth. There are a lot of benefits to having it in writing. You know, you're very careful what you say, in most cases. And then if you end up with a rant via text or email, you know, now the parent, they've got to think about contradicting themselves in the future. And the same holds true with the coach. I don't want to think that, you know, I know we have the coach's perspective, but, you know, Matt and I, we're parents. We've been on the other side. We've as administrators have been in the middle of this and seen it from both ways. You know, you can really get yourself into trouble with putting an imprint as well, especially if it's an emotional situation. So, you know, you have to look at the positives and negatives. As far as, you know, going beyond that, you know, face to face is always best, but there does have to be some sort of protection. You know, there probably should be a third party present. That one-on-one meeting sometimes leads to a lot of, you know, well, I told him this and he said this and blah, blah, blah. It's always better to have, you know, maybe a neutral party. That way, if tensions rise or anything like that, they can maybe step in and cool it, redirect the questions, and lessen the tension. Because at the end of the day, if you're having a meeting, if you're having a conversation, I don't care how it is, there must be a goal for a resolution. You know, you want something accomplished by the meeting. So, you know, I think that's the way you have to think about it. What am I trying to accomplish? How can we accomplish this? If both sides agree that you can't, I don't think it matters whether you're emailing back and forth, texting back and forth, or talking in person.
Well, Matt, I'm intrigued by this a lot because I think this takes me back to one of the points last week of, remember we talked about the veteran coach or the proven coach compared to maybe the young and up and coming coach, where obviously they're going to be able to be maybe a little bit more blunt, straightforward. Not to say they don't need to still be professional, but, you know, perhaps they're going to get away with not engaging in as many of these things. You know, you as a coach have accomplished a great deal. You've always been more of a face-to-face type of person. Maybe put your athletic director hat on as still being a coach or whatnot. How are you going to feel about a face-to-face meeting that maybe comes down to coach said, parent said, compared to the text or email where they're going back and forth and it is there in kind of print? Just talk us through a little bit of your thoughts as you're listening to Jeremy's reaction.
Well, I think no matter what situation you're in as a coach, whether you're a longtime coach, just starting out, whatever, in today's day and age, you hate to say it, but I just think you're better off to have somebody else in the room. You know, if there's going to be a meeting, then you probably need to have your athletic administrator just sort of sitting there too. You know, I've sat in meetings in that role before, and I usually tell people, look, I'm just here sort of to observe. You know, I sat in a meeting a couple years ago and I told them, I said, I don't plan on saying much. I'm here as a third party. I'm here just to observe, you know, and sure, I let the coach and the parent talk. But in that way, you do have another person in the room. Short of recording the conversation or something, you know, that's about the only way to do it. And I think Jeremy's right. I think we just live in a day and time where, you know, unfortunately, a face-to-face conversation isn't what it used to be. A handshake doesn't mean always what it used to. I think having some documentation, some third-party representation is just probably a better way to do it. It protects both parties, really. It protects the parents too, because if a coach tries to come back and say, well, this parent said this to me, well, no, wait a minute, I was in there. You mean that's not exactly what they said? So it protects both sides.
Right.
Well, Jeremy, in closing then, is this just a matter, you know, when we've had some people asking about sending stats and dealing with media and all those things and saying, is everything we're talking about just a matter of it being different in, say, 2014 as it was even, say, 10 years ago in coaching? Does it come down to just something as simple as that?
Yeah, I do think that that's part of it. I think you still have people that, you know, it's kind of like that traditionalist argument, you know, or the purist argument. There's certain things that, you know, and you know, the three of us are all guilty of this in both ways, being contradictory. I think in looking at different sports or looking at different situations where there's certain things that we just want to be the way they've always been, or that we just want them to be the way they have been throughout history. But there's so many things that just can't ever be that way. It just doesn't make sense. It's too easy to make things better or make things easier. you know, I think there's some of that with the stats, and there's some of that, you know, we understand that stats are somewhat arbitrary. It's no different than grades. You know, the 94 you get in one math class isn't the same 94 you get in the other class, and a 70% on some tests is not a 70. So those are arbitrary anyway. You know, every game, every situation is different, especially in high school sports. Statistics are only valuable in, if you take them in the right context and you can see how they fit in the bigger picture. And, you know, getting all bent out of shape about whether, you know, you're putting too much out there. You know, I don't think any of the good coaches, any of the good teams, they're going to do their due diligence and prepare for you whether they have your stats on a website or have your stats in the newspaper or not.
Well, guys, a lot of fun, great discussion, great feedback, you know, parents and fans and coaches and everyone else listening. If there's more that you want to talk about, let us know, 740-569-3254. Well, guys, time for one of my favorite things I do on the website every year. I put a lot of time and effort into it. So SVC volleyball fans who are listening, who is your player of the year? Who's in your top 7 or maybe even top 14 or even up to 21? I'll tell you mine, and Matt will evaluate my thought process as a coach, and Jeremy will evaluate the picks themselves. We do this in 32 seconds. Well, guys, a nice little old school too there. I got a little feedback in the bump music last week, and someone was excited to see that Bruce returned to form, and he wasn't sure about the week before. I want to say he used the term like chick flick movie tunes or whatever they were. And I wanted to tell him, well, if you knew who ended up sending those in, it would make more sense to you. But again, at least we are getting a little variety, and we are getting some nice feedback from some of our listeners. So, guys, as we get into the postseason of SVC volleyball teams off into the tournament brackets, it gives me time every year to reflect back, and I put a lot of time and effort into this. Certainly doesn't make it the right list. It just makes it my list. And, you know, I've been talking over the last couple of years about how the SVC volleyball league is so elite, and the SVC is such a good league, and people constantly talk about how we do a good job of honoring our kids. But I've always argued that doesn't mean that we can't continue to look at how we can do it better. And I just think the volleyball league's one league that just completely cheats kids in terms of not honoring enough of them. You know, I've done a real simple math problem there where in basketball we start, 40 kids across the league, and we honor 15 of them on 3 teams. Well, if you punch that into the calculator, because I certainly wouldn't try to do it in my head, it comes out to 0.375, so at 38% there. And then now I look at it in volleyball. Well, with the different rules of tracking your defensive specialists and so forth, you're basically starting 7 kids in volleyball, and you take that across the league, that's 56 kids. So when I look at it as, why not go to 3 teams of 7 and really honor some of these defensive specialists throughout the 3 levels? And when I take the 21 and I divide that by the 56, I'll be, if I don't come out to the same exact 0.375 number. So to me, it just makes a lot of sense, and it's something I'd like to see happen. And, you know, people start talking, Matt, about, you know, the honoring kids versus watering it down. Well, if anyone who watches SVC volleyball certainly is going to know you're not watering anything down, because we easily have that many kids that deserve the SVC All-League honor, if you will. Just talk to us a little bit, Matt, about your thoughts when it comes to honoring kids versus watering it down, and how a lot of times these decisions get mixed up because we don't allow maybe the true experts to make these decisions or to vote or be the voice for our school, because we're asking maybe some administrators who have far, far more important things to do than to worry about how we're voting in our SVC volleyball rooms.
Yeah, you know, when we started talking about this, excuse me, you know, I've always I'm most familiar, obviously, in the SVC with how basketball does it. And And because of how well basketball, I think the SBC in terms of their process for selecting all-league basketball is as good, if not better, than anybody's in our area. I'm really familiar with about four or five other leagues in our general area, and I can tell you the SVC's way of doing it in basketball is way better than theirs. And I think because of that, I was under the illusion that the SVC has it together in all the sports. And then as I listened to some of the volleyball stuff from you and some of the way we do baseball and even football, then I started to scratch my head a little bit. I'm not so sure the SVC is quite as their policies quite as bulletproof in those other sports as it is in basketball, and it may need revisited. The funny thing about it is when we revisit these policies, like you just said, oftentimes most of these policies are set by people that quite frankly haven't coached or aren't coaching, haven't really sat in those rooms to see how this stuff shakes out and to really know what kinks need to be worked out, if that makes sense. I guess that's no different than our educational, you know, system where legislators make rules and a lot of them have never been in the classroom either. And then we see what kind of shape that gets us in sometimes. But as a principal, I'm sure Jeremy can attest to that. But in sports, it's similar. Really, let's face it. All league affects who? All league affects players and all league affects coaches. Sure. Those are the two people directly related to the process. And when there's a problem with the process or there's controversy, who hears about it? Normally the coaches.
All night long.
But yet, oftentimes, administrators who aren't directly involved and don't really have skin in this game, so to speak, when it comes to who's all league, they set policy and, quite frankly, don't really know what they're doing at times with that policy. Whereas I think the coaches who are in those rooms every year know what needs to be done. And I think if we would allow coaches to set the policy in all league, we would be better off. You know, there are certain decisions that have to be set by administrators, obviously.
Well, coaches, let me interrupt.
Coaches shouldn't have anything to do with.
Don't
but
you,
in this case, you know,
don't you think that it's not even a matter of the administration being able to or not. It's one of those things that at the varsity level, the school has hired a coach, and there should have been a thought process and some opinions and some character checks and some different things on that person. So, you know, in your case, Vinton County is trusting you to be the boys basketball coach. Well, when you go into a meeting, certainly you should be able to speak on Vinton County's behalf. Isn't that fair?
Well, yeah, I think it is, but I guess what I'm saying is if your league has set a policy for how you do all league and they're not going to allow you as a coach to have any say in that, or the coaches as a whole to have any say in that, then the coaches are just in that room and they're just hamstrung. You know, I mean, they're basically just there to, okay, look, this is the policy. This is the process we have. We have to go by it. I mean, the TVC process for all league is nothing short of a joke, to be completely honest with you. And I'm not afraid to say it. Now, with that being said, I've also went to the meetings and laid out plans, and I've tried to be a part of the solution, you know, not just sit in the back and complain. But if you have a policy that's flawed, if you have a process that's flawed, yeah, as a coach, what can you do other than just do the best you can with a flawed system, you know? Yeah.
Well, Jeremy, I know you really caught my attention with something. You and I have known each other for a lot longer than, you know, since you moved to the area. But once you moved to the area, you made a comment to me, and friend to friend just talking sports one night, it's really stuck with me. You were amazed with the level of volleyball, and you were amazed across the entire league. You gave me examples from almost 6-7 different schools of kids who were not quote unquote all league that you knew would be really, really legitimate talents at leagues all over Southeast Ohio. So to hear someone with your knowledge make that comment, is it fair for me to assume that stretching this out to about 21 kids would in no way be watering it down?
Oh, there's no question about it. You know, and I, that's something that I've had discussions with, you know, whether regardless of the school, you know, I talking to parents, talking to kids, about where they fall or, you know, maybe worrying about being an honorable mention. If you're an honorable mention player, in volleyball in the SVC, you know, just go ahead and call yourself an all-league player because that's what you are. You know, there's no question about that. So if your name appears on the list, and I would say that to anybody, if your name appears on whether it's this list or the official list that when it comes out, I'm telling you, there's nobody on there that is just filling up space.
Well, Jeremy, let me stay with you because I've got to get something out there before I can fairly go down through my list. And that's with Adina, Jenna Hutton. As volleyball people know, Jenna's one of the real special talents in our league. Really, really good player. Really at the halfway point when the injury first hit, she was easily a top five player in our league, in my opinion, maybe higher in terms of into the top two or three.
Right.
And as time went on, she's definitely missed some time. And our league's had a little precedent set over the years with Arledge there in basketball, Southworth in basketball, and some different things. And it's really difficult for me. So the way I wanted to handle this was just honor her up front. And I did not put her into my 21 because I just wasn't sure exactly how to do that, because it's one of those things where, okay, are you going to move her down to third team because she only played in like maybe 60% of her team sets? Or are you going to go ahead and still vote her up there in the top three where her talent was? Or so the way I wanted to do it is I wanted to just give her kind of an honorary spot on my team and recognize her as a special, special talent on one of the truly great programs in our league. But I also wanted to throw this out there as discussion because she is such a talented player. I think she can be maybe a platform here for us to have a quick discussion. And Jeremy, I'll ask you, when we look at this, maybe do our leagues need or do our sports in our league need some type of rule like golf, where maybe in volleyball, you need to play in 10 out of 14 matches? Or should we give the coaches a special clause, like when they're meeting in the room, to say, hey, Jenna's a senior. We obviously know she's special talent. We need to honor her. And even if we're not going to put her on official spot, maybe give her a banquet spot to come be honored as one of the elite players. Just some of your thoughts there on as you would tackle something like that, making a list.
Well, it's an interesting point. As far as making, a minimum or something like that, I don't know that I would be in favor. And maybe this volleyball league is unique, but I tend to have confidence and faith that the coaches in that room have a pretty good understanding of the game of volleyball, and whatever decision that they come up with, although it could be debated, I would just kind of entrust with them that decision that they would make. That may not be the case in every sport and in every situation, but in this scenario, I'm going to trust the integrity of the coaches involved that they'll make a good decision there, and I would be able to rationalize however it comes out.
Well, certainly. And Matt, as we lead into the team, the way I'd like to do this is on each team, Matt, I'm just going to kind of give you a coaching type of question that I was kind of wrestling with. Then I'll state my team, talk about the kids a little bit. Then Jeremy, I'll kind of get your feedback and discuss a little volleyball. And Matt, I guess I'll ask you a two-part question as I get into my first team here. How do you handle a player who's been injured, like Jeremy and I were just discussing with this very talented kid in Jenna Hutton at Adina? And how at what point does it impact you the most? Is it going to impact you a little bit more up here at the top when you're picking your player of the year or your really elite players, or is it going to maybe more toward the bottom of the list? Just talk us through your thought process on injured players and then picking a POI.
Well, it's difficult with the injured player thing because I don't have a good answer for you. I don't. I mean, it's just tough.
You're right.
It's one of those things because you don't want that player left off because obviously he or she's deserving based on how talented they are, how good when they do play they are. But you also have to consider the other kids who have played in every, maybe every set, every match of the year. And how do we weigh that? So it's kind of like it's that age old argument of is it the most deserving or the best? And that's a tough call sometimes. And in terms of player of the year, I've never believed that, you necessarily have to go with a player off of the championship team. I know some people believe wholeheartedly in that, and I don't fault them for that. It's just not my opinion. I think, it's an individual award, and sometimes the best player in a league will be on one of the teams that aren't as good, so I've always viewed that as its own individual thing, and I'm going to take who I think the best player in the league is. I know it's that old most valuable versus best and all that. I'm just looking at the best player. If I were drafting a player, if we had a draft, this is the player I'm picking first. And I kind of look at it more that way, regardless of what team they're on.
Well, fans, I have no idea how the coaches voted. So if you're listening to this later in the week and maybe they've been public by then, I have no idea at this point. I always like it that way because I want it to just be my opinion and be fair. And please understand this has nothing to do with the opinions of SVC coaches. This is just where I've gone around and watched every team multiple times. And let me know if you agree, disagree. 740-569-3254. You'll get you a voice message there, and you'll have about a minute or two to talk. Just throw out an opinion or a change, and we'll talk about it on an upcoming show. So we get right in the first team, and you know, when I look at my top seven, I could probably this is such an elite list. I could probably make an argument for POY for probably almost five, maybe even six of these kids. And I'm going to start my list right at the top with the SVC champions with Alexis Overly. I've really wrestled three, four names here, and I just think she's had a role change this year. And the way she's been able to all around influence matches and the way she's been able to do it on the biggest stage, biggest stages throughout the end of the year here in the championship runs just been real impressive to me. I wasn't sure with the role change, to be honest, at the beginning of the year in terms of taking one of your elite players, taking her hands off the ball in certain situations. But she's been able to move around. It's made Steinbrook better. It's made Ward better in the back, taking pressure off her. It's allowed, you know, Neff and Overly and some other kids just to stretch out and impact the matches in more ways. And I think that's always important, being able to make people around you better. So I'm going to start Alexis Overly. And then as I move down the list, I have Kirsten Dawson, the setter here at Edina. I feel like at the halfway point, when Jeremy and I called the first round game over at Edina and they had beaten Uniota, at that point in the year, she was probably my halfway POY, if you will. And then, you know, Amanda Curry at Westfall. If you were to tell me, hey, she's the most dominant net player and she's my player of the year, I would be very respectful of that selection. I would understand that. I'll also go McKenna Steinbrook, the incredible setter at the Uniota. Obviously, if you're a stats person, she's covered that. But really, if you're just as the most important position on the best team, she covers that. And she's done it so well, moving in, distributes the ball out to a balanced attack. Can't say enough about the job she's done. I'll go Jessica Hutton over to Dina. This is a first teamer, no brainer. Such a high volleyball IQ. So good. Had to shoulder a lot more responsibility when Jenna went out. She's really talented. I'll go back to Westfall with Hannah Phillips. She's a kid that can do a lot of things with her size. She can defend the net. She's a good setter. Deadly serve, arguably the best serve in the league when she really gets that going at with her tall frame, being able to release that ball high and get that good top spin on it. And then defensive specialist, I'll go Elena Lytle again. I tell you, there's a couple other defensive specialists you'll see me on or hear me honor this evening. But I just go back to it's just the eye test. Again, if you're a stats person, she covers the stats. I mean, she's up there again in the leading spot. She's going to almost hit the 2,000 mark in her career here, if not in the sectional in the district semi. But beyond that, again, it's just her anticipation. It's her effort. It's her range to the ball. If you watch as much volleyball around the league as I do, it's kind of like, for people that don't know volleyball very well, it's kind of like that shortstop or that center fielder that just gets to one or two balls a game that just, and you say to yourself, wow, I don't know if anyone else in the league could have done that. She's that type of player. At times, maybe didn't play the game with the same joy, never doubted her physical effort at all. But there's some times later in the years I saw some of that come back a little bit where she just takes that Huntington team to a completely different level. And when they were able to play with the top three teams, it was usually as a result of her incredible effort in the back row. So, you know, Jeremy, I'll come to you, top seven. I would think, agree or disagree, I think if I would tell you, hey, I'll give you Overly, Dawson, Curry, Steinbrook, Hutton, Phillips, and Lytle wearing the different collar jersey, I think that would make anybody a little bit better coach.
Oh, yeah, and I don't think you're going to have, just like anything else, you might have some conversations about, kids getting left off. I don't think it's one of those things, again, when you're honoring volleyball players in this conference. It's not about somebody not being deserving of a particular spot. It's more about, kids getting left out. I think you have some talented first team talents that just won't be first team because of numbers.
Absolutely. And that's a great point, because when you hear the second team here in just a second, you'll understand a lot what Jeremy's talking about. When you get is deep down to 14, even 15, 16 kids, you're talking about some really, really good volleyball players. And it goes back to my original point of why the SBC is really missing out on honoring some really good players. And you know, Matt, that's where I'll come back to you here, because as I go to a second team, another thing the SBC does not do well is they basically just randomly, after their player of the year, they just start randomly naming kids all the way down to 15. There's no first team, second team, third team. And that makes it really hard to maybe honor some of those more elite kids. So I guess I'll ask you your opinion on that. Plus, maybe ask you to give your opinion on picking a really good player off the middle teams in the league compared to, say, that third, fourth best player on some of the elite teams. As you get down in the middle of your list, how much does team success start to play a role?
Well, the first part of that question, it's so odd to me why, you know, if you consider there are certain sports that you can't really go into it as a league and say, OK, every sport we're going to do all league this way, because sports are different, obviously. You know what I mean? There's you know, you have to do football a little bit different than you do basketball. But basketball and volleyball are so similar, you know, in terms of the number of kids you play. I don't know why you would have your basketball team's first, second, third team honorable mention, and then your volleyball team just have 15 people. I don't understand it. I'd love for somebody to call in and tell me the thought process that developed that. But you know, that would be interesting to know. In terms of your middle, the question about the middle players, I think the second, when you start to get into those, that middle group, in this case, the second team, sometimes that's the hardest team to fill in a lot of ways, because, you know, you're going to have, now volleyball's kind of a weird case, because like you guys say, there's so many good players in this league, but oftentimes you'll have a handful of elite players that, okay, these are kind of my first teamers. But then you get into that second group and it's like, wow, I've got like 10 names down here for five spots or six spots, or however many spots you have. So it's a little tougher. And sometimes, to answer your question, Shane, you have to have a tiebreaker, you know? So sometimes maybe that is team success. You know what I mean? It's like, I can't decide between these two, and this team had more success. And, you know, so yeah, it's kind of tough in that middle group sometimes.
Well, guys, let's move into that second group. Coming off of that defensive specialist here, my defensive specialist on this second team is going to be Emily Ward of Uniota. If you know, if you are a stats person, it kind of is something that you got to be aware of when you have balanced teams. I would compare it to that balanced team in basketball, where they put the five kids between, you know, 9 and 14 points, and you look at, there might be one or two kids that, if given the chance, could probably score 20, and maybe the team wouldn't be as good, but statistically, it could definitely influence when you put a player of the talent of Alexis Overly back into the defense, and how that stretches out Akari Neff and so forth, and Taylor Overly, that can impact that. So I'm going to definitely make sure that we honor some defensive specialists throughout my list here, because I think those are probably the kids that get cheated the most on the real coaches list. So I'll put Emily Ward here on my second team, top five in digs and the top 10 in aces, does a nice job serving. And then on the second team, you're going to see right away when I start saying names about how these are, as Jeremy's always told us, these are first team caliber players throughout Southeast Ohio leagues. I really believe that. We have some really good all around players here. I'll go with Emily Dresbach out Southeastern, a great all around kid, really good serve, sets the ball, defends the net really well for a setter, and really defends off the net just as efficiently. I'll go with a pair of Huntington teammates in here, of Ricky McGill and Delana Gragg. Both are very skilled kids. Both are asked to do quite a bit across the six rotations. I think they would probably agree with me if I were to ask them that maybe they didn't have the year from an efficiency standpoint that they wanted to have. But nonetheless, when you look at their skill and their ability to do a lot of things, definitely two kids that deserve to be mentioned before we get out of our top 10, 11, 12 kids. I'll go with a pair of Uniota Lady Shermans off the championship squad here as well, with Taylor Overly and Kari Neff. Just two really, really good all-around players. You know, Taylor really coming back from the injury earlier in her career, so talented, and with the left hand, gives Coach Reinauer such a weapon there. And then Kari obviously can impact it with her serve. She can impact it defensively. I thought she was really improved at the net this year. And again, the stats are kind of that balance thing I talked about. You know, they may not always climb the rankings, if you will, because, you know, the ball's being spread out so much there. But nonetheless, they need to be in there. And then perhaps the one that will be up for debate, but I'll debate it with anybody who wants to, was Alex Chafin's got to be on this second list here because she had a huge second half. I know she really became a top five hitter in the league, and I think people have to understand. I'll say this to the Uniota, to the Adina, to the Westfall fans listening out there. If all you do is watch the kids come through a couple times a year against your school, you're probably not totally getting a fair indication on where kids maybe come into individually across this list, in my opinion. And here's why. You know, obviously, you know, in our league, you're talking about three teams at the top that are, as we might find out before the year's over, one of the top four, top six, top eight teams in the state of Ohio. But, you know, so a lot of times what happens is these kids are not getting the same opportunity and the same types of systems to really put their skill set on. So what happens is when you're put in those spots, some of your weaknesses are attacked a little bit more, and you're not always able to just be put into your strength situation as, say, some kids on those really elite teams are. So, you know, Jeremy, I'm going to feel real strong about putting the Chafin girl there in on my second team. So, again, Ward to wear the different collar jersey on my second unit with the all-around talents of Dresbach, McGill, Greg, Overly, Neff, and Chafin, whatever order you choose to put them into, that's the group I'll put on my second team. I think even a coach wouldn't be too disappointed with that group.
Yeah, I don't think there's any question about that. That's a very, very talented group. You talk about all-around players. I think you could argue about the switching roles. You know, you and I talk about this. What would happen if you put this kid on this team surrounded by these other players? You know, then how would you view them? And we can do that by sitting out and watching from afar. You know, but I think you make a good point about fans and even coaches when they only see players against, you know, those two times against their team. That might be a little bit difficult, and I do respect your perspective there, because you get to watch in a variety of different settings and really get to see the highs and the lows, and like you said, the strengths and the weaknesses of the individual talent.
And Jeremy, it is a hypothetical thing, I understand, but I guess it goes both ways, I guess, because it's not only putting this kid on an elite team and seeing how they would shine, it's also, okay, could this kid come off this team, go try to carry this team, and would they do it any better? So it kind of goes both ways. It really is a neat discussion point, but nonetheless, I feel real confident about that second group there as we get 14 spots down my list. And, you know, Matt, as I get into the third team, I guess there always has to be a question thrown out there to a coach, because I think it's one that comes up in every sport. How important is it that all eight schools be represented or when you go to fill out an all-league team?
I've never really believed that has to happen. I realize we live in a society where everyone's supposed to get a ribbon at the end of the day, but the fact of the matter is, you know, when you're selecting something like this, not every team's going to be, you know, not every team's going to be represented if you're doing it fairly. I mean, there's going to be, you know, you're talking about, you guys have talked at length tonight about how deep this league is in terms of talent. And if you're just going to randomly say, well, we have to put a representative from every team, then somebody who deserves to be on there is going to get left off. And I think the whole idea is to try to, you know, get the deserving kids on there. You know, the reason you see probably multiple kids from Uniota and Adina and West Falls because they're the best teams, you know, and the reason they're the best teams in a lot of cases, they have the best players. So there's bound to be more of them, you know? And so I've never been a believer that every team has to be represented.
Well, Matt and Jeremy, as I go to my third team, again, as I start with the different collar jersey here, I'm going to go with Carly Carroll out of Adina. I think she's one of the more improved players in the league, does such a super job in the back row, a good serve as well. So when I think of Lytle and Ward and Carroll, you could probably debate the order of the defensive specialists. That's the way I'll go with it. Obviously, any team would be crazy about the opportunity to have any of those three kids wearing that different color jersey and defending that back row. I think that that's just the way I go about it from a range situation and some of the kids they have around them and some different things that they're asked to do. And then as I get into my third team, I definitely got to get back to Westfall here. And I'll go with Hannah Wallace and Kelly Fox. I think with Wallace, you're talking about arguably the league's best defender at the net. So active at the net. Does a good job of stretching the hands out over. Rarely see the efficiency errors, if you will. The blocking errors or getting in the net or it's so tough to tool her block and so forth. She just does a great job. And then, you know, I think the Fox girl, as I watch her play, you start to understand across all sports why kids like this can take good teams and make them great. Sometimes maybe we use the term role player. With her, I think it's beyond a role. I think she's almost taken roles and almost made herself into more of a star elite all-league player. And when you look at her on the basketball court, when you look at her on the softball field, and you look at her here, it's all the same thing. I had a chance to really – she was one of the kids I was really wanting to evaluate in this final week to give her a fair look. And I can't say enough how impressed I am with her intangibles. It's not just her skill. It's the things she brings to championship teams. Just can't say enough about her. Just a really, really good athlete, good player. Then I'm going to go back to Southeastern. Now, obviously, within the Southeastern, I probably can't get past two spots for the Lady Panthers. So I'm going to go Logan Goble here. I know Skeens is a special athlete that a lot of people have started to take a look at. She's one of the elite hitters and defenders at the net in our league. But I just felt like Logan Goble, as an all-around player, probably playing a little out of position, which would make her a little bit elite. It goes back to that thing I said earlier about sometimes if kids were able to play more where they could get into a defined role, you would see their strengths highlighted and their weaknesses hidden, where sometimes with an athlete like Logan playing on a team more in the bottom half of the league there, she's asked to maybe take on a little bit more responsibility. So I'll go Logan Goble there. Then I'll get back to Adina with Carly Bauer. Really good player. I thought her production went way up when Hutton had to go out with the injury. Obviously, your role changes there. She responded to that in a big way. So, you know, I get down to just two spots left, and I'll tell you, I've really debated on these the last 48 hours because, you know, Matt, the question I asked you, I started to look there. Obviously, I know the Paint Valley girls well, and I just don't know that they in this particular league are going to get a kid. I know Serena Gale and Bailey Countryman and some athletes we've heard in other sports like Newland and Mills and Smith. That, to me, just didn't feel like they fit, so I eliminated Paint Valley. And then I kind of came back to Piketon, and I started looking, you know, all right, there's Reuter there, and if you're a stats person, you know, obviously Conley's had a good year statistically. I really like Chandler and Ward and some kids there. Also, stat-wise, I got back to Zane Trace. I know their setter does a nice job, Ashton Ward. I know Katie Unger's a good athlete. And I started looking at the top three teams there again, or the top half. I know Ray and Huntington's had a big year, and Carissa Poehler, and I know Cassidy Williams at Westfall, and I'm probably even missing some kids. But I just got myself back to Uniota, and I got myself back to Piketon. And I'll go Hannah Nelson, and I'll go Peyton Reuter here, and let me explain why. First, I go Hannah Nelson because out of all of those kids I mentioned, I just feel like it's a kid that on an elite level did things that put Uniota over the hump. She offered an incredible defensive ability at the net. She was so improved offensively. I go back to her Westfall performance. I hate to name all league just on one performance, but let's face it, if Uniota doesn't win that night, we're probably viewing our all league a little bit differently just because that's what we do. And she was so efficient and so, so good. You know, what happens a lot of times is when you don't get the top level chances, you have to be very efficient in the chances you do get. And I think she really took that role and dominated it this year at an all-league level. And then, again, I'll go Peyton Reuter. I just felt like Piketon different from some of the other situations because Piketon was able to start to stretch up to four wins. And again, I understand maybe the top three schools wouldn't understand that because all of these other schools are 0-6 before the league starts. But throughout the rest of the league, I felt like she's really helped start to lift the Lady Red Streaks to a competitive level. They started to steal some sets here and there or play into the 20s with some of the elite teams. They even started to knock some teams off and do some things. So, you know, Jeremy, I really struggled as I got down to spots 20, 21, which I guess you'll always do. But to recap here, I'll go Wallace and Fox of Westfall. I'll go Goble. I'll go Bauer. I'll go Nelson from Uniode. I'll go Reuter, then with Carroll wearing the different collared jersey. Just your reaction as I finish the list there.
You know, I look at Carly Carroll. I think she's one of the most improved players in the league from last year to this year. I agree completely with Kelly Fox. You talk about a kid that is versatile in every sport that she plays. And I'm not sure that there's an athlete in the conference that is capable of playing as many roles on a team that she does in three sports, which is just remarkable. Again, Hannah Nelson, I think those were great points, and it leads me to my kind of big question, and I'll throw back to you guys before we wrap this up. How much, you know, you talked about tiebreakers earlier. When you're really trying to decide between one kid or another, or these two versus these two, you've got to go back to how did they compete against the best teams, or how do they compete solely in the league? You know, I know in various sports you've got a larger number of conference games versus non-conference games. You know, how do you guys feel that those stats play into determining all league? Because, you know, when you put the stats on the table or you talk about kids, you know, you're talking about their body of work over the whole season.
Well, Matt, I'll let you start there. Give a coach perspective there. When stat sheets start being passed around the room, when you're a coach sitting in these rooms, how much is that going to impact?
Me personally, I'm going to use the stats as maybe a tiebreaker in my own mind, or maybe to supplement my decision, if that makes sense. But
right.
if I'm a coach and I've seen these kids play at least twice. And in basketball, anyway, more than that, because we watch film and we scout and all those things. I don't know, you know, at what level that happens in volleyball. But if I've seen, so I've probably seen these kids play, the better players in the league, you know, 3-4 times anyway. I'm going to base it on my opinion of them as a player, kind of the eye test that we always refer to. But sometimes those stats come in handy when you sort of have two kids that you're not sure about and they're kind of equal, and you get to looking and you say, it's kind of like what you said, Shane, with the girl, I believe from Zane Trace, right? When you made the comment about, if you only see them play Uniota West Florida,
yes,
you know?
Yes.
So sometimes I may look at those stats and say, you know, maybe I just caught this guy on a bad night. You know, his numbers the rest of the year were pretty good. So, you know, the stats can come in handy, but I would hate to think any coach just makes a decision solely based on stats.
So would you say that you rely more on your scouting report than your statistical report? Like,
yeah,
when you're preparing. And that's the way that I would view it. You know, if I didn't, you know, if I look at this team and in preparations and scouting and I looked at how I was going to play this kid and this kid, and then a third, you know, young man or young woman ended up with the better stats or, you know, maybe put up ahead of those kids. How are you handling that situation? Because I always kind of felt like if these are the guys that I signaled out and talking to other coaches and, you know, that I'm looking at, you know, I don't know that even though the coach may put them up in that order, I don't know that I can stick with that order.
Sure. Well, I guess to answer your question, Jeremy, for me, you know, stats are there. You know, obviously I see them throughout the entire year. So I see a large sample size of them against a variety of competitions. So, I mean, they're there. So they're in my mind. But I go more throughout the year on the eye test. That's why there's times I don't even go to the best games every single time out of the 14 SVC nights. There's times, as I did late in the year, I go to a variety of games and see a variety of teams. And I guess that's why I look at it in terms of maybe the eye test I see, the talent I see, and then you know, obviously the team they play on and what they're asked to do and how much they're going, as you say, how much are they getting. So like when I look at the three defensive specialists, how much are they asked to do compared to the other ones in the league? When I look at some of the hitters, how does the ball come off of their hand compared to some of the other ones, the setters, their court vision, their different things? Because a lot of times, statistically, someone might make a great read and put a perfect setup there, but let's face it, it's going to be a lot easier to get more assists when it's Alexis Overly or Amanda Curry hitting it, right? So right. So those things all always go into play too. So I think you make up an awesome point You know, stats are out there. Stats are a part of it. Stats are fun to look at and analyze. And oftentimes they tell the story, but oftentimes they don't tell the whole story. And I think that's where I try to do my best to get out and just see a variety of it and stay very, very objective. I don't really have a very subjective viewpoint on a lot of these things. So I'm able to stay very objective when I go to games, and that's kind of where the team forms. Well, guys, obviously there's going to be a ton of opinion out there, and we want to encourage it to come in. 740-569-3254. We're going to be staying on a little bit longer than usual this week, and what I'll do is I'll do a good job, Bruce, there on the website of letting people know the time, a breakdown, because there'll be a lot of people that want to really focus in on the volleyball talk, but we certainly don't want to cheat our other sports here. So, guys, with that in mind, I want to get into our two-minute drill. Guys, we mentioned in the opening that we had a busy week in the SVC, so that's what Rapid Fire will do to help move us through it. This week, we'll return to our own question and then talk about them at the end. So, fans, we'll have Matt go on the first question. Jeremy, you go there in the middle, and I'll take the final one. Bruce, what do you have for us?
Adida Volleyball won the league 14 straight times from 1990 to 2003. Unioto Cross Country entered this past Saturday looking to tie this record, but the Piketon boys stopped the streak. With this win, as well as the Unioto girls beating Zane Trace, what is your headline to best describe this year's SVC Championship meet?
Big enough targets eventually get hit.
After winning both the SVC and District Player of the Year, Caleb Arnold represented the SVC this past weekend at the State Golf Tournament. What word would you use to describe this season for the Zane Trace Jr.?
Breakout.
In response to last week's basketball question, one fan wanted to know if the league would be better or worse than a year ago. In boys, the answer is blank, and in girls, the answer is blank.
In boys, the answer is yes, and in girls, the answer is it depends how you look at it. Well, guys, let's jump right back into our discussion. Matt, I love your headline there. It makes a lot of sense to me. As I was starting to look, is this going to be more of a trend or a splash in the pan type of situation moving forward? I think Piketon has three seniors there in the top five with Farmer, Kane, and Varney that are going to move on. They do have some freshmen on the team there and a junior high winner. Girls' side, I know Zane Trace has some nice runners, but I tell you, Unioto has great depth, and I know they've had some kids move into the school there in the 8th, 9th, and 10th grade. Going to be tough to beat in the future. Just talk to us a little bit about your target headline there.
Well, obviously teams have been gunning for these two teams for a while now. And this year, congratulations to Piketon and Unioto for getting over that hump in that SVC meet. But I don't know whether I want to go as far to say changing of the guard or anything like that, because I just think you have to wait and see. Who knows? I mean, if one of those schools turn around and win the next 10, okay, then this was a 1-year thing. And if not, then maybe it is changing the guard. We'll have to wait and see. That's why I just made that headline what I made it. I think, teams have been gunning for these two schools for a while, and they finally got them.
Well, guys, I know that on Shout-O-Matic there, I'd released something on the cross country, and even though we're running a little later in the show, certainly don't want to cheat these other sports here this evening. Bruce, do we have that one on cross country?
SVC fans, had a little SVC history this morning out of Southeastern High School in the cross country SVC championships. On the boys' side, a 13-year streak of Uniotas comes to an end as the Piketon Red Streaks, led by the individual title of Seth Farmer. They beat Unioto by just 3 points, a pretty exciting finish from what I'm told. I'm still going to sort out all the results here and get those up for you on the website, but I can also tell you that the Unioto Lady Shermans, led by Kayla Harkins, individual title, has taken down Zane Trace girls as well. So a couple streaks snapped there. It's the first Piketon title on the boys' side since 1997. A lot of you remember that was back during one of their historical runs. I believe it reached 11 years in that stretch. So Unioto streak stops at 13. That's one shy of Adina's 14 in volleyball for a league record. Make sure you check out the website later today. I'll have all the results from the boys and girls, and that's high school and junior high.
Well, Bruce, appreciate you getting that for us. I want to let the fans know, Justin Mendenhall, former player of mine, who has helped us a lot with the technology and the design on the website. He's got us moving some stuff around there, does an awesome job. You'll see a chance to follow us on Shout-O-Matic and get these types of voice updates as they happen. And Yeah, Jeremy, on your question, as we move to number two, I was looking at the word gratifying a little bit here, and it's just is really nice to see a kid work so hard. And a lot of times we put so much thought and time into to people who don't put a lot of time in it and then complain about how it goes. This is kind of the antonym of that. You know what I'm saying? It's the hard right. work and the improvement. I loved your breakout term there. Just talk to us a little bit about Caleb Arnold.
Well, you know, just the improvement from one year to the next, but you know, it's not only about right now. You're talking about a junior, so you know, the odds of him being able to make that kind of incremental difference in his scoring as he did this year, I don't know that that's possible. But you know, on a larger scale, just think if he is better next year, and that's kind of where I've gone with that.
Well, guys, as I moved into question number three, I think there's no question the boys' league's better. Adina's better. Huntington will still be solid with the first team like Shanks in the middle there. Paint Valley's better. Piketon's better. Southeastern's better. Uniota's even better, and there's a champ. Westfall's better. Zane Trace still has incredible talent there at the top of their roster. So the boys, without questions, better. Girls a little tougher to figure out maybe because you got some younger teams getting older. Still got a really, really good team at the top setting a bar. Got a couple new faces that are obviously going to change things a bunch in terms of title contenders. You know, Matt, I'll turn to you here on basketball and get your thought process from afar. I know you play a lot of SVC schools. Maybe stick to the boys' side here and give us a little take on some things that excite you the most when you follow some SVC coming up.
Yeah, I mean, like you said, I mean, the top of the league, Uniota, I would assume has to be the pick of that league, and obviously they're a year older and in a lot of ways probably better, but I think the league is, you know, pretty deep. I think when you judge this question, you have to say how many teams are better than they were last year, and you just rattled them off. So I think if teams top to bottom have improved, your league's going to be deeper and better. And I think the thing that makes girls tough is exactly what you said. Freshmen coming in can be such high impact players at the girl level, some new faces, and I think you just have to wait and see sometimes with girls.
Well, Jeremy, let's take you to the girls' side here. I mean, it kind of comes full circle back to the volleyball discussion. If we're going to sit here and compare every team against Uniota, I guess the league's going to be awful. But if we're going to sit here and look at the league from a year ago till now, you're going to start to see a lot of teams get a little bit better, aren't you?
Oh, I would surely hope. I think about all the guards last year that got experience, and as much as we talk about guard play, I don't know why any of us would be biased to that, but we talk about how critical it is to be able to control the dribble, and you know that is such a key in basketball, whether it's boys, girls, whatever. But you're going to have kids with experience handling the ball this year where you really didn't have that much last year. So when you look team to team, when you look at the guard play, I think the overall play in the league is going to be considerably better this year.
Well, guys, I tell you, I had down on the agenda because I wasn't sure where the conversation with the second guest coaching would go and with the volleyball, and I know we're running a little bit over, but I at least wanted to get a quick mention on SVC football before we get out of here. I had a chance to go up and watch Paint Valley the other night, and it was almost just it was just attention getting how much better they were up there at Westfall the other night. They strike at you in so many different ways. We know how good Tegan and Anthony are in the backfield, but Caleb Johnson gives them a different change of pace. Tony Hatfield scores offensively and defensively. McCloy's a threat. And then the defense is going to have to start getting more due. I mean, they went up there and really did a job, and I guess they start to stretch themselves week by week as more and more as a favorite. And then quietly, Uniota continues to post great defensive things, and Hosley and company offensively doing some special things. So I guess those two teams have separated themselves from a lot of others. They're both obviously Uniota's already played Paint Valley. They're going to need help, but both of these teams making a playoff push. I just wanted to get a comment from each of you before we get out of here to make sure, because I know we'll get a chance to talk football more as we get closer to the postseason. But Matt, have you seen anything at all that would make you not believe that Uniota and Paint Valley starting to set themselves apart as the top level in the league?
Oh, I definitely think so. I think we've talked about, you know, matchups, who's going to be able to knock those teams off, if anybody. You know, I think the Piketon team's dangerous offensively. Of course, they had an injury the other night. We don't know how bad that is. I wouldn't judge the Piketon team on playing in the rain because that probably hurts them with their style of play pretty bad. Right. But they're a dangerous team. The interesting thing is going to be, I think, postseason, and we'll talk more about it, I think, with every win, Paint Valley, beating bigger schools is climbing the ranks. Uniota is suffering the opposite of that a little bit. So it'll be interesting to see if Uniota can run this thing out to 9-1 and if they do get in. So I know we'll have a lot of chance, like you said, to talk about it, but it's going to be interesting down the stretch.
Jeremy, I know what playoff appearances do for the schools and the communities and just the overall athletic boosters and so forth. It's just a real morale boost. Talk to us a little bit with your time there at Uniota in the athletic department. What a playoff appearance would mean to that school?
Well, in a lot of ways, it's kind of the missing piece to the overall puzzle. And you talk about the overall success and how diversified the athletes are at Uniota, especially in the fall. When you look at what's been accomplished there in the last stretch, 4 or 5 years, the number of championships in fall sports. When you throw in a playoff appearance in football, you know, that's just a huge boom, whether it's, you know, just financially or just school spirit, community-wise, I think it goes a long way in helping all your athletic programs.
Well, I'll tell you what, guys, I appreciate you hanging in with me for the long show tonight. I know SEO Preps has a lot of topics on for future shows. I just couldn't get to them this week with the packed agenda, a few emails, face-to-face talks, so forth. So if you're listening out there, definitely got those in my agenda bank, if you will, and I'll get to those. So just appreciate everybody staying with us for the longer show. And until next time, for Triple Crown Family Fun Center, for Bruce Knox and all the fine people at DBK Media Services, for Matt Combs and for Jeremy Ward, this is Shane Combs reminding you to keep visiting SVCSportsZone.com, where we are 100% SVC, 100% of the time.
You've been listening to the Triple Crown Family Fun Center, SVC Sports Talk. SVC Sports Talk is brought to you by SVCSportsZone.com and Triple Crown Family Fun Center. Join us next time for the Triple Crown Family Fun Center SVC Sports Talk. And visit SVCSportsZone.com, where we're 100% SVC 100% of the time.